The Way Out Podcast, episode 84.
Always trying to manage the image of what was actually going on so that everyone's seen to what was actually going on inside. And it was, it really eventually got tiring. And then we got married and she got pregnant and she stopped drinking. And I say that is the beginning of my spiral to my bottom. It's the end of the day at work and we're at the shop and people bring in a case of beer. And I was like, oh, I can have three or four of those, drink them quickly, be home in a decent time, and then just say I didn't have any drinks. Like, a part of them holds on to the fact that maybe you're telling the truth. Yeah. But then the other part is definitely, I know you're lying. Get home right now. I know what you're doing at the shop. Come home right now. And every time I would take drinking away from myself, I realize how miserable it would make me. I think I have a problem with drinking because I can't stop.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us on this week's installment of The Way Out. Sharing stories from people just like you who have recovered from alcoholism and other addictions. The Way Out does not speak on behalf of, nor are we affiliated with, any 12-step organization. Our purpose is to share with you, one episode at a time, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. The Way Out Podcast is sponsored by Transitions Daily. Would you like to join a free, anonymous, online group that offers a daily topic email with popular recovery resources accompanied by a secret Facebook group for discussion? Go to dailyaaemails.com for more information about Transitions Daily. Don't forget to share dailyaaemails.com with friends, in meetings, and with sponsees in recovery. Make sure to check out the official website of The Way Out Podcast at www.wayoutcast.com. There you will find links to our latest episodes on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Radio FM. You can also follow The Way Out Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Help us get the message out that lifelong recovery from alcoholism and addiction is possible by giving us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. The Way Out Podcast is on right now. I'm Charlie, and I'll be your host for part 2 of my interview with Eric, a loyal listener of The Way Out Podcast who bravely shares his story with us. In part 2, Eric shares how his alcoholism comes to a breaking point and his realization that he can't stop drinking comes crashing down upon him. He knows of Alcoholics Anonymous by now and is finally willing to do whatever it takes to recover. Listen up.
So it goes on for like 5 years and you know, it was she didn't like hard drugs, so I would always have to sneak it. And we'd be at a party and I'd sneak to the bathroom with a couple of friends and do some coke or go to away for a weekend with some friends and do a bunch of drugs. It was always this like dance and on what to do, what to say, how much to say I was drinking, make sure I was always trying to manage the image of what was actually going on so that everyone's seen to what was actually going on inside. And it was it really eventually got tiring. And then we got married and she got pregnant and she stopped drinking. And I say that is the beginning of my spiral to my bottom.
So tell me about this Jekyll and Hyde, because that's how I felt too. Like, I was trying to portray myself as a normal drinker, right? But I was anything but, right? Especially as I was getting into adulthood, and it sounds like that's really the case for you. Like, I can't let these people know how I actually drink, right? Because if they knew how much I and how regularly I drank and used drugs, they wouldn't want me to do it anymore. And I can't risk them finding out because I can't risk them trying to get me to stop. Can you relate to that?
Oh, absolutely. It's this whole, how do I spin this story so I can continue to do what I'm doing and they not know what I'm actually doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's exhausting.
it wears you out. So it's the end of the day at work and we're at the shop and people bring in a case of beer. And I was like, oh, I can have three or four of those, drink them quickly, be home in a decent time, and then just say I didn't have any drinks.
Bingo. Oh, it's like out of my playbook, brother. Absolutely. I'll shotgun these bastards, right? Yeah. And I can manage it. You won't even know that I had any. And then I can have at least three. Well, I'm going to have like four or five or whatever, but I'm only going to let you see two. So that's the kind of program that I absolutely worked. The problem for me, and I don't know if you can relate to this, Eric, but I was trying to outsmart my wife, who was already smarter than me and not drunk, which doesn't really work in my favor. Can you relate to that?
Oh, absolutely. Like, a part of them holds on to the fact that maybe you're telling the truth. Yeah. But then the other part is definitely, I know you're lying. Get home right now. I know what you're doing at the shop. Come home right now.
Right.
And then it became, and then all of a sudden it transitioned from the lies. Then all of a sudden now it was, I get caught for this lie. How do I get in the good books for a bit? So she's looking over here while I'm doing something else over there. And absolutely, it's just that it was like, it's just a big game, right? Like, and it was, and every time I would take drinking away from myself, I realized how miserable it would make me. And then finally, when she got pregnant and she quit drinking, and within 4 months of that, when we were kind of fighting about me going out every once in a while with friends, I did have a moment where I sat down on the kitchen table and I said, I think I have a problem with drinking because I can't stop. And then she says to me, don't be stupid. You don't have a problem with drinking. You just need to stop.
Yeah, it's not a problem, Eric. All you have to do is stop. Oh, I didn't think of that.
So I realized in that moment, it's like, this isn't going to go as planned. So it was a continued. And from there, it was just bad. My mental state was getting number and number. My depression was slipping in. I was getting to the point where I would drink beers at the shop and then do some cocaine so I had energy and it didn't look like I was drunk when I was at home. So it was just like...
So the lengths that you're now willing to go in order to be able to continue to drink like you need to drink is now reaching some pretty drastic measures.
Yeah, exactly. And it all kind of comes to a point where I just didn't realize how bad the people that are surrounded around you on how you don't think that you're under control of your circumstances, but how you're picking these people to be around you. So I take customers that I know like to drink and do drugs to a hockey game as a sales thing.
Absolutely.
Where I know that I can go and drink and do a bunch of coke and do all these things. And I thought it was all their fault. But sure. I mean, really, I'm choosing these people to be around me to because I know what the outcome is going to be.
Absolutely. You're choosing your company to enable your addiction and your alcoholism. When the first time you said, hey, I think I have a problem, and your wife is like, that's silly. All you need to do is stop. Was that how did that feel to you? Did you feel like there's just something wrong with you? Like, maybe I just do need to stop. Maybe I just haven't tried hard enough. Maybe or was it more like, no, I know I can't stop. And she thinks that it's just that easy. So now I have to work double time to try to hide this from her.
It was definitely the voice that my addiction side wanted to hear.
Sure.
Because it said, see, even if you did sell anybody, they're not going to believe you. So you might as well keep hiding it.
Bingo. So it allowed you to continue to rationalize why you could continue to drink. Because nobody was going to believe you or support you anyway.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it was the depression. Oh, my God, the depression was bad. And so I eventually have a spiraling out of control. And my wife says if you don't, because she was catching on to me doing drugs. And she could tell that I had been doing drugs when I come home. And that was kind of her breaking point where she goes, if you don't make it, if you don't stop right now and stop drinking and stop doing drugs, then I'm going to kick you out. And then I would do it and she wouldn't kick me out. And I say, this week I'll do it. And then I would do it and she wouldn't kick me out. And this went on for quite a while, for a few months. And then finally I kind of had a crazed drive to the city and smoke some meth and drink all night and then come home, go to work the next day. And then on my way home, actually, before going to work, I phoned her all high. And I told her and some stuff that I had been doing the last couple of years and why I'm falling apart so bad. And that I had been partaking in some extramarital activities. And I wanted to wipe my conscience clean.
Ah, you came clean and you... Oh, yeah. I have a similar experience, so I want to hear how yours turned out.
So, that was the... You're kicked out. And I went to stay at my uncle's house. And I said, I'm going to AA. And then I made it 10 days sober. And that was all around the same time as me reaching out to this guy. And then we didn't really talk about it. And I made it 10 days sober, then I would drink again. And then I'd make it 7 days sober, then I would drink again. And this whole time, I'm living at my uncle's on my own. I would come and see the kids on the weekends and stuff. And then finally, the last weekend, I was drinking for like 3 days straight. I think I missed a day of work. I was doing a bunch of coke. And I actually got ready to kill myself because there's nothing else I could do. I had the rope tied around my neck, and the faces of my kids showed up in my mind. So I just untied it and went laid down on the couch. And then my wife had known that something was going on because I had been disappeared for a couple days. And she phoned an AA friend, and little did I know that night, she had line phoned at 2 a.m. A treatment center and got me a bed and was already in the motion of taking me to treatment. So it was an intense weekend, I guess you can say.
No doubt about it. That is the bottom. That is that I cannot continue to use and drink like I've been drinking, but I can't stop. And you reached that horrible, horrible, horrible place that we need to reach in order to truly surrender to this thing, to this disease of addiction and alcoholism, which is I can't continue to live like I'm living. I can't continue to use like this, because every time I do, I run into the answer that says, I can't do this, whether that because I'm in a coma for a week because I got into a car accident, whether that be because I go on a all-night binge and cheat on my wife, or whether that be because I stand up to the biggest, tallest guy in the party and tell him that he's an a-hole and get my ass beat, right? All of those things have told you, I can't continue to drink and use like this. But then when I try to quit, life becomes unbearable. When I try to be sober without a solution, life becomes unbearable. And it tells me that I can't quit. So you're in a can't use, can't quit situation. I might as well kill myself. I might as well end it right here, right now, because I can't take it. Is that how you felt?
Yeah, it's exactly. It's this stuck place where it goes, I'm going to lose everything because of drinking and drugs, but I can't stop. And I don't know what I'm doing. I've been going to AA. I understand it. I say all the right things. I can blow smoke up all their ass. I think I believe it, but I realize that reading the directions for something doesn't mean that you're doing it. And it reminded me of somebody at an AA meeting, and he said, the how is honesty, open-minded, and willingness, mm-hmm. but none of it works without action.
Bingo.
Right.
So. Boom. But I love the blowing the smoke out their asses because, you know, I made a career before truly surrendering 3+ years ago. Any prior experience I had in treatments and AA was all about waxing poetically about steps that I didn't fucking work. Right? And part of me wanted to believe in this 12-step program, and part of me thought it was a bunch of shit. Right? Can you relate to that?
Yeah. And I realized, too, that I really did truly want what they had.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't willing to do the work to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was supposed to be handed to me. Like, it was just, don't you get it? I deserve it.
Mm.
Right? Like, I deserve this.
Absolutely.
But everything was backwards. Everything you think about is backwards. Well, and until it's turned around the right way.
So you had this surrender moment, Eric, and you go to treatment. What's that experience like for you?
It's the best thing that ever happened. So that morning, the AA member showed up at the house, and he goes, have you had enough? And I said, yes.
Spoken like a true alcoholic and anonymous member. Are you done yet? Are you freaking done yet? Love it.
That's what he was getting like, because I think he had about 5 or 6 of these meetings with me. And but this time it was different. The first ones were, you know, tears and oh, my life, this is so shitty, I want to change. But this one was no tears, no nothing. It was just, have you done enough? Are you done yet? And I said, yes. He's like, are you willing to go to treatment? I said, yes. He's like, okay. Your wife's going to come pick you up in 2 hours. It's like, don't be drinking until she gets here, right? and then he left me alone. And those 2 hours before she came and picked me up, that in that moment when I was just laying there incoherent and just that, it was different that time. Yeah. That time when somebody asked, have you had enough? It was different.
Yeah.
Everything was clear.
Yeah.
Where I said, you know what? I don't care what my job thinks. I don't care what my family thinks. I don't care what my friends think. I don't care what everybody thinks. I just need to go and listen to somebody because clearly whatever I'm doing isn't working.
This week's Recovery Revealed segment is brought to you by All Recovery Rings and allrecoveryrings.com. Would you like a medallion or coin from your favorite recovery program, hand-forged into a beautiful ring? Go to allrecoveryrings.com. and choose from over 15 stunning styles, all hand-forged by expert craftsmen. What are you waiting for? Do like I did and get your very own recovery ring today. We'll be right back with the conclusion of my interview with Eric as we pause once again for this week's rendition of Recovery Revealed, an opportunity to reflect upon a certain facet of life and recovery. The 12 steps are, in their very essence, a methodology designed to produce a very specific outcome. The program, as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, is not the least bit theoretical, academic, or hypothetical in terms of the outcome produced by working through all 12 steps as instructed. That's right! The Big Book's first 164 pages are an instruction manual on how to achieve a change within ourselves sufficient enough to arrest our addiction and or our alcoholism. The methodology of the 12 steps don't appear to make a whole hell of a lot of sense at first blush.
admitting powerlessness in unmanageability doesn't appear to be incredibly useful if we're trying to overcome addiction. Trusting in a higher power to restore sanity around our disease sounds more like religious voodoo than a solid plan to eradicate the obsession to drink and use. Moral inventories and removal of character defects might be swell, but what does that have to do with the fact that I don't sober well? Making amends sounds like a lot of apologizing, and I'm pretty sure nobody wants to hear another empty apology. Steps 11 and 12 seem like lofty goals to aspire to, but somehow not quite pertinent to the fact that all I ever want to do is get out of my own skin. To smash that eject button in the form of whatever substance or behavior that I'm able to convince myself is okay to use. The 12 steps are a methodology that must be worked thoroughly in order to produce the desired outcome, which is a spiritual awakening sufficient to recover. That is, that the obsession is arrested provided we do what is asked of us. Our job then is to judge the results of working the steps, not to prejudge the methodology prior to working through it. I believe this has to be true for other recovery programs as well. They must be worked as directed in order to achieve the desired result. Simply attending recovery meetings and fellowship is likely not going to be an effective long-term solution. We must do the work and be observant of the results. For me, when I worked step one, I realized the result after working step one was I made way for a power greater than myself to operate within me. Steps 2 and 3 allowed me to tap into that God of my understanding, which has proven to be the absolute difference maker in my recovery, despite how skeptical I was of thinking that creating my own higher power would provide any meaningful relief of my condition. But I prayed anyhow, and something I still can't explain happens when I continue to pray to a God I absolutely did not understand in the beginning. Steps 4 and 5 gave me necessary insight into my behavior patterns and what was the root cause of these destructive behaviors, as well as essential shame shedding by virtue of sharing my innermost demons with the God of my understanding and another person. Steps 8 and 9 allowed me to get right with the people I had harmed as a result of my destructive default programming, that is, the behavior patterns I was operating with, because it was the only way I knew how to get through life. Steps 10 and 11 allow me to continue to be mindful of the principles I learned in steps 1 through 9 on a daily basis, so my disease continues to be arrested one day at a time. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I learned that in order to keep what I have, I must give it away to anyone who'll have it. Reading these steps and trying to apply our current experience in order to predict the efficacy will not produce the vital change needed to recover. We must work each and every step with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Now back to the conclusion of my interview with Eric. Listen up.
Don't forget, the way we get the message out to those who still suffer is to give this podcast a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform.
It was like I was in a straitjacket with a 50-pound weight on my chest. And then when I said, yes, I'll go to treatment, it was like I was untied and the weight was taken off.
Ah, the surrender. And it's this moment of surrender is really bittersweet, right? Like, it, at least for me, it felt so amazing and it was such a huge relief, right? To surrender. Can you relate to that feeling of relief where you just, like, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. I'm just done.
Yeah, if I were to have to put it into, like, the physical sensations of it, It was like I was in a straitjacket with a 50-pound weight on my chest. And then when I said, yes, I'll go to treatment, it was like I was untied and the weight was taken off.
Oh, it's a beautiful way to put it. It's
like, oh.
Beautiful. Like, oh, I can breathe. I can breathe again.
And then she took me there, and then I went, and I go into the house, and then I always thought a treatment center would be about, like, you know, downtown and cons and junkies and just be this total grungy, like, bad place. Everything about it would be bad. And then I got there and I go in, and there's, you know, three or four guys around my age and around 30. And then there's some older people, some younger people, and they're all like, hey, how are you? My name's Brett. My name's Levi. And everything is so welcoming. And then all of a sudden, you know, you start working a program, you know, from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed every day for you know, for my case, it was 40 days. So it was nothing like I expected it
to be. If you could say the biggest thing that you were able to really draw from that experience, what was it?
I realized that there's way more to it. There's so many analogies that I picked up on, and so many things that really clicked. And the head psychologist or psychoanalyst or psychotherapist, I think was what they called themselves, where she got it through to me that the image of my drinking and using, it's not really the problem. It was the solution to your problem.
Oh, God, isn't that something? Like, shit, that wasn't the problem. I'm the bleeping problem. And drugs and alcohol were the solution to me.
And then when all these things start sinking in, it's like, oh, I get it.
Yes.
That's why it takes the rest of your life, because it took your whole life till now to fuck it all up. Not.
Yeah, brother. No doubt about it. But I want to get well right now. I want to be cured. I want to feel amazing every day all the time. I don't want to have to be a process. But yeah, we don't realize that we spent our whole lives getting all screwed up. So it's going to be a process to get unscrewed.
And then you learn things like denial. Mm. And you can understand denial, but then you realize that so many things that I was in denial about, you don't realize that you're in denial until things starts clicking and making sense. And it was just, okay, this from my childhood made me unconscious or self-conscious about this, and these things made me like this, and all of a sudden it was like, that's why I can't really talk to people, or this is why I feel uncomfortable, and it was, to be honest, it was amazing to learn some of these life lessons that should have been taught when you're a child.
Yeah,
but it's taught to you in a treatment facility with a bunch of alcoholic and drug addicts.
Yeah, we start to learn how to live sober. And we start to learn how to deal with our emotions. And we start to learn how to develop healthy coping strategies. And we pick up some tools that help us be able to cope with things that seem like they're unmanageable. You know, biggest struggle for me still today is, you know, unmanageable, or like I like to call them, seemingly unmanageable and overwhelming feelings, right? Like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to deal with these feelings, but I have tools today to be able to walk through those in a healthy way, and I don't have to drink over it, and I don't have to use over it. And was the treatment center 12-step based?
It was, but it was kind of a mixed bag. So they took the 12 steps and compacted them into 5. Cool. And then it was so they didn't say they were for sure a 12-step program, but they were basically a 12-step program.
Right. Well, from what I understand, when the 12-step program was originally introduced, there was only like 4 steps or something, right? So, so, that's cool. That's really, really cool. What happens when you get out of treatment? Is that a scary day?
Yeah. It's like you're being set free out into the world with, it's like, all right, now you're good luck.
Right. I'm with the structure, right? And if you're like me, you do really, really well in a structured environment, but, you know, idle sort of free time and freedom can be dangerous and scary for a newly sober and recovering addict and alcoholic. So you had some of that fear of, like, am I going to be able to do this?
And that fear at first was overwhelming, but then I realized that I needed that fear because then it kept me away from old places. It kept me away from certain things and certain relationships and setting healthy boundaries with some of my family. And it also gave me determination to go to meetings.
Yes. Good motivation to be able to replug in and connect from that perspective. What was, as you worked through the steps, tell me about that process for you, and tell me how that helped you.
It was really good. In treatment, I did a step 4, and I wrote it all down. And then for about 5 days after that, I was just an absolute nightmare to be around. And I was getting in fights with staff members, and there was a big thing, and they had to have a meeting with me because I was breaking rules and I was talking bad to people and all these things. One of the counselors says, like, you're not the first this happens to you. It's we called it an emotional detox. You've done detoxing from your drugs and alcohol. Now you need to emotionally detox from all the emotions you've been numbing for the last 15 years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. They come out all sorts of sideways, don't they? Because we're not used to being able to deal with these emotions, because yes, we've been medicating for so long.
Yeah, and I always viewed emotions as a weakness, as something that you can use against somebody. So I spent my entire, as early as I can remember, is that I control my emotions and they stay down so nobody can see them.
And when you're doing that, if you're like me, like, emotions were the enemy, right? And I can totally identify with emotions being the enemy. Like, no, they are not. The emotions don't serve me, and I don't like them, and I don't like how they feel. So I'm going to stuff them down as far as I possibly can. And so did you go through a process, Eric, that it took you a while to even try to identify what you were feeling at a given time?
I still struggle with it.
Yeah, good. Well, good, man. I don't feel alone, because I definitely still struggle with that too.
I think that one's a real tough one, because I really identify with it, is that my mom was very emotional and my brother was very emotional. And I could use their quick two emotions to my advantage.
Sure.
And I could use it to manipulate, and I could use it to, and I realize that that's where my fundamental beginnings of how I started to deal with my emotions started. And to go back and try to figure out, how do I get these emotions out? Sometimes I get so frustrated. It's like, why can't I just, like, understand and feel something right now?
Absolutely. Oh, man, Eric, I totally identify with you, brother, on that. Totally. I am still an emotional, as my 13-year-old son, he's now 14, says, if you're new at something, you're a noob. I'm an emotional noob at 3 years sober. I'm still a newbie.
Yeah, and I totally understand that. And I keep reminding myself, I was an impulsive person, and it's something that happened where I expect results right now. I want relief, and relief comes now. I want happiness, and happiness comes now. Absolutely. But that's not how it works.
No, man. But I still want it right now sometimes.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Awesome. So tell me a little bit about how life is today for you, Eric. I mean, you go through this dramatic surrender, and it gives you the ability to be able to really start working your recovery in a meaningful and authentic way. And that's starting to pay. Obviously, we now see that it's paying some dividends for you. Give me your sobriety date, and then tell me what life is like today.
So my sobriety date is April 24th, 2017.
That is amazing. That is absolutely. You're coming up in not too far, brother, on 12 months of continuous sobriety. And if you're like me, that shit don't happen by accident.
No, it's been a blessing. And it's been something that I'm truly starting to take hold of the gratitudes, where I realize I can't just be grateful today that I'm sober. It's every day I'm presented with a reason on why it's working. And I am so grateful that my wife was put in my path, that she was stubborn enough and strong enough to put her foot down.
Yeah.
That I could have been 50 and our kids could have been moved out of our house, and the lifestyle could have continued on where I just managed my alcoholism and would lived a miserable life. But instead she said, I'm not having it, and this stops. And it may have taken me 3 years to stop, but I stopped, and I get to have the rest of my life to actually live. And maybe I could have stopped after my accident, but obviously my higher power didn't have that plan for me yet, and I needed to have more things go wrong in my life until I had something worthwhile to hold on to in recovery. And I realized it was a family. It was to be a father and a husband, and to have true power behind my sobriety, to realize this is what I want, and this is way better than I could have ever imagined.
That is such an amazing story, man. I love that. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's allowed you to be the father that you want to be to your kids, and it's allowed you to be the husband that you want to be to the wife that stood by you and loved you enough to say no and say this isn't okay. How's your relationship with your wife and your kids today?
It's really good. Obviously we've had some repairing to do and it's been tough, but there's Al-Anon in our small town, and she goes to an Al-Anon meeting every week.
Oh, does she have a black belt yet?
I'm not sure what that is.
It's not a real thing, but I always like to say that, you know, if they go to Al-Anon long enough, they're going to get a black belt in the Al-Anon, and then you can't get away with anything.
All right, well, that I think she already has a black belt.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And that's such a beautiful thing. So she's going to Al-Anon because we know that this is a family disease, and she's working on her. And she's working. And that's amazing.
Yeah, so she has a group of people that deal with the same issues. She's working her own 12-step program. We talk about each other's programs to a point, and I have my people in AA to relate to and talk to, and she has her people in Al-Anon to relate to and talk to. And we realized that there was no way that we could get through this, just the two of us. The only way we could get through this is by opening our minds to other people and help. So,
and so you have a WEAP program, and your wife has a WEAP program. And that WEAP program allows you to be able to, one day at a time, live in sobriety.
Exactly.
Amazing. Absolutely 100% amazing. I love it. If you, Eric, could tell the newcomer one thing about being able to recover, what would that be?
It's I set expectations on what recovery was supposed to be instead of seeing and listening and feeling first and making my own understanding of what recovery is going to be.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Eric, it's been an absolute 100% pleasure, man, to have you on the Way Out podcast. I can't thank you enough for reaching out to me, brother. I'm grateful to have been able to share your story.
Yes, I just had the urge, and I'm starting to follow these intuitions.
God bless you, man. This is God's work, and this is how we help. This is how we get the message out that we can recover, right? And if you felt like I felt, and you did the things that I did, and you thought like I thought, then you can recover too, right? And we all have such a powerful story when we've recovered. And it was such an amazing experience to be a part of yours today. So thank you.
No, thank you.
All right, Eric. Say goodbye to the Way Out podcast audience.
See you guys later.
All right. If you want to reach out to Eric, if you loved his story and you want to connect to him, or if you just want to reach out and say, hey, thanks for sharing your story, Eric. Thanks for being vulnerable. Thank you for taking the risk to share your story. You can email the show at share@wayoutcast.com. That's share@wayoutcast.com. Eric, brother, thank you again.
Thank you for being a part of The Way Out, where we share stories from people just like you who have recovered from alcoholism and other addictions. If you would like to reach out to the show, you can visit us on the web at wayoutcast.com. That's wayoutcast, all one word, .com. Or drop your host a friendly email at share@wayoutcast.com. There you can also find links to previous episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podcast Garden. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the podcast, contact me at share@wayoutcast.com. See you next time. And remember, if you don't change, your sobriety day will.